The boys at Enron liked to go to girly shows. They boasted that they could make a dog look like a duck and get accountants and banks to agree and certify it. The executives all thought that they were smart, but that didn't mean they were wise enough to see the folly of their arrogance. Two Fortune magazine reporters have produced a book about what could be the most expensive scandal in U.S. corporate history, the rise of Enron to the seventh-ranked company on the Fortune 500, and its sudden fall into bankruptcy. The Smartest Guys in the Room is by Bethany McLean and Peter Elkind. Bethany McLean and the book's editorial director, Joe Nocera, join us from our studios in New York City. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having us, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
We will identify Joe as our regular commentator on economic affairs. Let me begin, if I can, with that whole idea of turning a dog into a duck, because that's an analogy that actually came up in corporate headquarters, wasn't it? How do we explain how Enron was able to move debt off their balance sheet and make it look like something else?
Well, that really comes from a former Enron employee who was trying to describe the company's accounting, because how Enron orchestrated its fraud really was either by making debt look like cash flow or by hiding debt off the balance sheet. And this accountant, in trying to describe it, said it was like making a dog look like a duck. You'd paint it white, you'd give it the right feet, you'd glue something on its nose, and you'd say, look, see, I followed all the rules. This is now a duck. But if you step back and looked at it, it was clearly still a dog.
Can we get a specific example of how they did that?
Sure. The biggest example is probably Enron's use of a device called prepays, which are kind of complicated commodity transactions. But what they really did was, by shuffling a commodity around, they managed to make debt look like operating cash flow. Mm-hmm. So in reality, where Enron should have had billions of dollars of debt reflected on its balance sheet, and therefore investors would have looked at the company and said, wow, this is not a very strong company. Instead, they were reporting this money as operating cash flow, which to any observer makes the company look much stronger than it is.
And it made people eager to invest in it.
Absolutely.
And it also made the rating agencies willing to kind of avert their eyes from the size of the debt, because one of the things the rating agencies care about is seeing operating cash flow.
You are particularly hard, not just obviously on top executives at Enron, but at Chase, at Citigroup, banks and investment firms and accountant firms that, in your judgment, and maybe quite soon a legal judgment, assisted Enron in fraud.
Right. The heart of the Enron story and the frightening thing about it is that it really wasn't a case of a few people doing the wrong thing. It was a case of almost no one associated with the company doing the right thing. And on the top of that list are the investment banks and Enron's accounting firm, Arthur Andersen, because without their not just participation, that's a too meek a way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Without their help, Enron would have been out of business years earlier. The company never worked as a business. It never produced enough cash to support itself. Yet the investment banks, knowing full well that they were deceiving investors, helped Enron misrepresent reality and provided it with literally billions of dollars of capital over the years. And Arthur Andersen, while knowing that Enron's accounting was right up against the edge, did exactly the same thing and allowed Enron to present a picture of itself through its financial statements that distorted reality.
How is it financially rewarding for an investment bank to assist a company in fraud?
Well, they get fees. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, if you're Citigroup or J.P. Morgan, you're doing two things. First, you're lending the company money, which the company always needs to have loans. But the second thing you're doing is you're devising the transactions that allow them to undergo the fraud. And there were lots of instances where Enron would say, take this asset off our hands for 3 months, we'll make it look like a sale even though it's not, and we'll pay you a lot of money in fees for doing this. And in fact, Scott, Andy Fastow used the prospect of investment banking fees to keep these guys right where he wanted them.
And to put that in perspective a little bit, Enron was one of the top fee payers that corporate America has ever seen. In 1999 alone, the company paid almost $240 million in investment banking fees. So everyone wanted to do business with Enron.
How smart were or are Ken Lay, Jeffrey Skilling, Andy Fastow, top Enron executives?
Some of them were very brilliant in some ways, but all of them had significant flaws in the way that they thought, and flaws that were exacerbated by their growing arrogance over the years. Andy Fastow, for example, was incredibly skilled at putting together these complicated structures, but he was an incompetent CFO. If you think of the job of a chief financial officer, one important component of it is to measure the amount of risk a company is taking. Mm-hmm. Andy Fastow had no ability to do that. And look at Jeff Skilling, a brilliant guy in many ways, able to just take a complicated thought and conceptualize it in such a crystal clear way. But at the same time, one major theme of the Enron story really is incompetence, because if Enron's businesses had ever worked, they wouldn't have needed to resort to all these transactions to paint a picture of a business that worked. They wouldn't have needed to camouflage anything.
Mm-hmm. And one of Ken Lay's great flaws was his inability to understand, you know, as a CEO, what are the necessary skills of a company president, of a chief financial officer, of the person running a division? And all the people running Enron had these fatal flaws, and Ken Lay didn't seem to understand it or care.
Did Enron, at any point in the last few years, no matter its corruptions, ever accomplish anything good?
Enron did accomplish something good. Under Jeff Skilling in the early 1990s, Enron really reinvented the natural gas business. It had been a very regulated business, and by the late 1980s, it was an industry that was struggling to figure out its way into the modern age. And it was Jeff Skilling who really conceptualized the idea of trading natural gas and making it a commodity like money. And he really created not just Enron, but an industry. The problem is that they weren't able to stop with that and say, instead of saying, wow, this was a fortuitous moment in time and we were able to do this with an industry, they began to see it as proof of their own brilliance that they could go into any industry and reinvent it. With the pressure to meet Wall Street's growth expectations, the whole thing spiraled out of control.
Yeah, I have a quote in the book. Jeffrey Skilling says, show me one, and then there's a vulgar expletive, one transaction that the accountants and the attorneys didn't sign off on. Is it possible that in the end it's going to be very difficult to present a legal case against Enron and these executives?
It is indeed possible that it's going to be difficult. It's been almost 2 years since Enron's bankruptcy and 2 years of intense investigation of executives. There have been a number of indictments, about a dozen indictments. Five people have pled guilty. So there certainly has been progress, but the problem is implicating the people at the top, namely Jeff Skilling and Ken Lay, because they do have, in many cases, this plausible deniability in that the accountants and the lawyers signed off on these transactions. In ethical terms, they are clearly to blame. For what happened at Enron. The more difficult thing may be proving criminal wrongdoing, but the government has just opened a very interesting new front by getting a witness to cooperate about some of the illegal things Enron did to shift profits around, and that may be the path that leads directly to both Skilling and Lay. Mm. So it's not over yet.
You know, one of the questions that I get asked all the time, just as a business journalist, is why are they going after Martha Stewart and Jeff Skilling still walking the streets? And it's a reasonable question to ask, but the answer is, what she did, or is alleged to have done, is really simple and easy to understand. And what the Enron people did is really complicated to understand, and in many cases, quite possibly, followed the letter of the law, even though it completely misrepresented the economic reality of the company.
Joe Nocera and Bethany McLean, Ms. McLean and Peter Elkind, are authors of The Smartest Guys in the Room, about the Enron scandal. Our friend Joe Nocera is editorial director of that book and of Fortune magazine, and of course a regular commentator here on Weekend Edition.